calls the gold cure for alcoholism. Mr. D, whom she would have married if it had not been for his clinging to the disgusting alcohol habit. She does not object to a person taking an occasional drink. She herself sometimes drinks beer and cordials. This again brings her back to her visit to St. Paul's without the walls and its surroundings. She remembers that in the neighbouring monastery of the Three Fountains, she drank a liquor made of eucalyptus by the Trappist monks who inhabit this monastery. She then relates how the monks transformed this malarial and swampy region into a dry and healthful neighbourhood by planting there many eucalyptus trees. The word euclamparia then resolves itself into eucalyptus and malaria, and the word wet refers to the former swampy nature of the place. Wet also suggests dry. Dry is actually the name of the man whom she would have married, except for his overindulgence in alcohol. The peculiar name of Dry is of Germanic origin, Dry, Three, and hence alludes to the Abbey of the Three Dry Fountains above mentioned. In talking about Mr. Dry's habit, she used the strong words, he could drink a fountain. Mr. Dry jocosely refers to his habit by saying, "You know I must drink because I am always dry," referring to his name. The eucalyptus also refers to her neurosis, which was at first diagnosed as malaria. She went to Italy because her attacks of anxiety, which were accompanied by marked trembling and shivering, were thought to be of malarial origin. She bought some eucalyptus oil from the monks, and she maintains that it has done her much good. The condensation euclamparia wet is therefore the point of junction for the dream as well as for the neurosis. 3. In a somewhat long and wild dream of my own, the chief point of which is apparently a sea voyage, it happens that the next landing is called Hersing, and the one farther on, Fleece. The latter is the name of my friend living in B, who has often been the objective point of my travels. But Hersing is put together from the names of places in the local environment of Vienna, which so often end in ing. Hitzing, Leasing, Mödling, Medelitz, Me Delicie, my own name, my joy, joy equals German Freude, and the English hearsay, which points to libel and establishes the relation to the indifferent dream excitement of the day, a poem in the Fliegende Blätter about a slanderous dwarf, Sedi Hashesed. By connecting the final syllable ing with the name Fleiß, Vlessingen is obtained, which is a real port on the sea voyage which my brother passes when he comes to visit us from England. But the English for Vlessingen is Flushing, which signifies blushing, and recalls erythrophobia, fear of blushing, which I treat, and also reminds me of a recent publication by Berthereau about this neurosis, which has given occasion for angry feelings in me. 4. Upon another occasion I had a dream which consisted of two parts. The first was the vividly remembered word autodidaska. The second was truthfully covered by a short and harmless fancy which had been developed a few days before, and which was to the effect that I must tell Professor N, when I saw him next, "The patient about whose condition I last consulted you is really suffering from a neurosis, just as you suspected." The coinage, autodidaska, must then not only satisfy the requirement that it should contain or represent a compressed meaning, but that this meaning should have a valid connection with my purpose, which is repeated from waking life, of giving Professor N his due credit. Now, autodidaska is equally celebrated into author, German Otto, autodidact, and Lasker, with whom is associated the name LaSalle. The first of these words leads to the occasion of the dream, which this time is significant. I had brought home to my wife several volumes by a well-known author who is a friend of my brother's, and who, as I have learned, comes from the same town as I, J.J. David. One evening she spoke to me about the profound impression which the touching sadness of a story in one of David's novels about a talented but degenerate person had made upon her, and our conversation turned upon the indications of talent which we perceive in our own children. Under the influence of what she had just read, my wife expressed a concern relative to our children, and I comforted her with a remark that it is just such dangers that can be averted by education. During the night my train of thoughts proceeded further, took up the concern of my wife, and connected with it all sorts of other things. An opinion which the poet had expressed to my brother upon the subject of marriage showed my thoughts a bypath which might lead to a representation in the dream. This path led to Breslau, into which city a lady who was a very good friend of ours had married. I found in Breslau, Lasker, and LaSalle as examples realizing our concern about being ruined at the hands of a woman, examples which enabled me to represent both manifestations of this influence for the bad at once. The chercher la femme, in which these thoughts may be summed up, when taken in another sense, brings me to my brother, who is still unmarried, and whose name is Alexander. Now I see that Alex, as we abbreviate the name, sounds almost like inversion of Lasker, and that this factor must have taken part in giving my thoughts their detour by way of Breslau. But this playing with names and syllables in which I am here engaged contains still another meaning. The wish that my brother may have a happy family life is represented by it in the following manner. In the artistic romance L'Oeuvre, the writer, as is well known, has incidentally given an episodic account of himself and of his own family happiness, and he appears under the name of Sandoz. Probably he has taken the following course in the name transformation. Zola, when inverted, as children like so much to do, gives Alos. But that was still too undisguised for him, therefore he replaced the syllable Al, which stands at the beginning of the name Alexander, by the third syllable of the same name, Sand, and thus Sandoz came about. In a similar manner my autodidaska originated. My fancy that I am telling Professor N. that the patient whom we have both seen is suffering from a neurosis got into the dream in the following manner. Shortly before the close of my working year, I received a patient in whose case my diagnosis failed me. A serious organic affliction, perhaps some changes in the spine, was to be assumed, but could not be proved. It would have been tempting to diagnose the trouble as a neurosis, but this would have put an end to all difficulties had it not been for the fact that the sexual amnesis, without which I am unwilling to admit a neurosis, was so energetically denied by the patient. In my embarrassment, I called to my assistance the physician, whom I respect most of all men, as others do also, and whose authority I surrender most completely. He listened to my doubts, told me he thought them justified, and then said, "Keep on observing the man. It is probably a neurosis." Since I know that he does not share my opinions about the etiology of neuroses, I suppressed my disagreement, but I did not conceal my skepticism. A few days after, I informed the patient that I did not know what to do with him, and advised him to go to someone else. Thereupon, to my great astonishment, he began to beg my pardon for having lied to me, saying that he had felt very much ashamed. And now he revealed to me just that piece of sexual etiology which I had expected, and which I found necessary for assuming the existence of a neurosis. This was a relief to me, but